to put in all the work, everybody for each other on the field, and then we stay there as a unit and we go towards our goals together as one.
For Martins, it's Sven Angulo to cross into the box. That's one missed it.
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to the Lions Block Podcast. This is your host, Gavin, and today we are talking about two losses in Orlando City land. Unfortunately, it's been a rough week. Here to discuss the two L's we took last week is my good friend Daniel. Daniel, how are you doing tonight?
Yeah, not bad. This is reminding me of the happy days of 2018.
Oh, yes. Honor thy history is the slogan this season, and we are honoring thy history for sure. Let's get straight into it. Just you and me tonight. And I forgot to ask for questions. And we've also, we were supposed to record last night. I was supposed to record with Adam, but Adam couldn't do it. And then Adam was going to record tonight with me, but he couldn't do it. So Daniel's hopping on. He's being a trooper. Appreciate it, big man. And we're going to get straight into it. Try not to take up too much of either of our times on a Friday night.
It's not like we do anything on a Friday night anyway. Don't pretend that we're like really cool and social. We're not.
Actually, I always joke with my wife that I get off work on Fridays and I just completely turn into like a puddle. I'm just a blob on the couch the rest of the night. So, but
I
not tonight.
I pictured you as the T-1000,
Yep, exactly. So, nope, tonight I am being productive and podcasting. So we're going to start with the Minnesota match. 2-3 home loss. Have to wheel our memories up a bit, get our brains working, but if you don't remember, we scored our fastest ever goal in Orlando City history, in club history, 13 seconds into the match. And we went on to lose the game with some fisticuffs at the end of the match between Cartagena and Rosales on the Minnesota side. We'll start with the lineup. Schlegel gets the nod at center back. Other than that, it's our standard back four. Felipe Martins gets the start over Cartagena. Probably for some rotation prior to the Tigres match. We saw Ramiro Henrique get a start and Ojeda, as well as Duncan Maguire. So Maguire for Luis Muriel, probably for rotation, and then Henrique coming in probably for rotation for Ladero, and Facu probably needed a break because of his injured shoulder. I was pretty happy with the lineup. Did you have anything that you thought on the lineup, or pretty standard for the situation and the players we had available?
I think as far as the situation goes, there wasn't much else you could really change, you can make an argument at right back to make a change there as well, but I don't know. The squad depth isn't great, we know that. So kind of like the next man up is Schlegel and Felipe, and that's it. What else can you say?
Yeah. Agreed. Well, let's go into the fast start. Duncan Maguire's goal. Just walk me through that, and what were your thoughts on that goal?
Well, it was definitely unexpected. I mean, the ball ended up in the air somehow. It came back sort of just beyond the halfway line, and Santos nipped in, which I thought was a really good little interception he made. And played the ball straight in. Maguire just turns and just knocks it into the keeper's near post. And I just thought it was such a good goal. I mean, I don't think anybody's conceding that early or expecting to. And he caught everybody cold, and it's one thing I did like right off the bat, that the ball was just taken and immediately played into the front man. And, you know, and I think that's a good way to start a game. I mean, you can't ask for any better start, can you? Unless you wanted it 13 seconds instead of 14. You can't really do much else. But I thought it was a great goal. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, difficult for a player to come into the game when they're called and, you know, and be sharp that quickly. So, you know, full props to Maguire.
Yeah, definitely. It was just, like you said, a really good goal, really visually pleasing goal with the pass from Santos. It's always visually pleasing when the ball kind of curves like that away from a player, but into the path of another player. It was a very good pass, and Duncan with a great first touch and slots it home. And
in football, that type of quick pass or the reverse pass, those two things do it for me in football. I'm like very, very happy when I see one of those two things happening on a football field, you know?
Definitely, definitely. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just that goal. I mean, right after the goal, we also we had another chance almost immediately. We were really rocking at the start of this game. We started like a bullet out of a gun, and we were looking good, feeling good. But unfortunately, where we're going to go to next is we were feeling a little too good, I think, and we went back to Galese, and he gets pressed by Pukki, and the clearance goes straight into Pukki. Galese wasn't as sharp in that moment.
No.
But ball bounces kindly for Pukki and ends up in the back of our net 1-1. And, I mean, gosh, what a mistake. How do you feel that, just on the goal? Give me your thoughts on the goal. But also, that impacts the game massively, because to go from 1-0 to 1-1, it's like a punch in the teeth.
I mean, I've seen Pukki play a lot. Like, some people may know he was in the Championship quite a bit with Norwich, and then he was in the Premier League with them as well. And he's just been a constant thorn in the side of a lot of teams. Like I said, I watched him a lot. He's a top-class pressing forward. Like, there's not many, you know, in the MLS right now that are as good at doing that as he is. And, you know, you saw his name on the team sheet, and I had a feeling he was going to get a goal. He's just that type of player. And I don't know what it is with Galese, but it's like he didn't have his eye on the ball or something of that nature. And you can't give a player like Pukki that chance to breathe. I mean, he can go the whole game without really touching the ball or having a meaningful contribution in a move. You give him an opportunity like that, he's going to stick it in the net. And it was very harsh, because it was totally against the run of play, I felt. And it just changed the whole direction of the game. I mean, I wasn't in the stadium, so I can't speak for the mood there. But, you know, having been at games with a similar sort of run, you can feel the apprehension kind of in the stands, especially when you concede a goal like that. That's kind of your own fault. And
it was almost,
it was
almost worse for that to be the way the game started, where you start with the goal, and then Galese dilly-dallies with the ball and then clears it straight into Pukki, and then you gift a goal. Like, it was almost worse for that to be the way the game started, because it just took all the momentum out of the game. I mean, the club really bigged up this game with the 10-year anniversary, and to have the start we did, I mean, we were – the fans were rocking, the team had momentum, and that just sucked all of it out of the stadium, and – it just became a normal match at that point. It was a really bad way to start a match in hindsight.
Yeah, it was. And I mean, it's like you kind of lost for words, because it shouldn't have happened, right? He's a top-class goalkeeper. And every player is prone to mistakes, but it's just one of those that you feel, I don't know, you've got this player, you know, zeroing in on you. You've just got to just clear the ball. You know, just clear it. Just do the simple thing. Because I'm trying to think. Maybe you said this in the instant reaction. I think I heard you say, but it changed the dynamic of the game. And I feel like, you know, if Orlando gets through that sort of 10-minute period, and doesn't concede, I think they're going on to score again, and then probably it's a comfortable victory after that, you know?
And yeah, I 100% agree with that. That goal, yeah. I think it changes the literal outcome of the match, that goal.
Well, it just puts doubt into the minds of the keeper. It puts doubt into the minds of the defenders. And I don't think a genius is needed to tell you that the defence is already very leaky and certainly has to be, you know, the players have to be certainly asking themselves questions already. So it's literally just the worst thing that could happen, you know, except for an on goal. It's probably the worst thing that could have happened at that time.
Yeah, I like the call for doubt, but also it puts momentum and confidence into the other team,
yep,
that they can get at us.
I was very impressed with them. You know, honestly, the way they moved the ball and the way they attacked the game. I mean, given that they're a club in transition, they've not had a head coach up until, I know they just hired somebody from Manchester United, but they were literally being without a coach for like 6 months, right? So.
Oh yeah, all off season they haven't had a coach.
Yep. So for a team to show up on an away game like that and be as sharp as they were and confident, I mean, you've got to give them some credit, because, you know, that goal doesn't happen, even if it's a mistake. I mean, it doesn't happen unless they've got the desire to go out there and try and make something happen. And I thought they looked extremely sharp, honestly.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I mean, I predicted a loss, right? Because they've been impressive and we have been in Champions Cup and dealing with that. Yeah. And also we've been in poor form in general. So absolutely, I've been impressed with them this season and wasn't surprised to see them put on a good performance in our stadium. So let's go to the Araujo injury. For those who still aren't sure what happened or just haven't heard, essentially he's up the pitch and he's sprinting back to try and put in a tackle. And the ball gets past him, and he doesn't get there in time. And he tries to, like, either slow down his run or make a quick pivot. And I think his stud gets stuck in the grass, or just his ankle rolls or something. But he just gets stuck and just slams his knee into the pitch. And it clearly hurt immediately. Immediately it hurt. And so that obviously has a big impact on the game, not only losing one of our best players on the team. We also were down to 10 men for a little bit, and we concede during that period. It's a really good goal from Pookie, just swivels and shoots. It hits it off the post and in. But what do you make of almost not even just the goal, but why do you think we let us go so long down to 10 men, even though there should have been some communication that he wasn't able to come back on? Because he was down for a while. I feel like we should have had somebody come on way quicker than we did.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can honestly assume, like you say, is communication was a factor. Like, maybe the player just didn't communicate his pain enough or as such. Maybe he wanted to carry on but couldn't. But I also wonder as well if they had the players ready to come on. Like, in the first half of games, I very rarely see players, when I'm watching Orlando at least, I very rarely see the players warming up. Second half, you'll tend to see them all getting out and being, you know, ready a lot quicker. But I just wonder if we just didn't have anybody ready and they thought, well, let's just try and get over this couple of minutes until we get somebody stripped off and ready to come in. And I think ultimately it just comes down to a lack of preparation, you know, whichever way you have it, whether it's the sub or whether it's just not knowing if the player is going to carry on or not. It seems like a little bit of misfortune as well.
Yep.
But, you know, all in all, I mean, got 9 subs, surely someone should be kind of ready immediately. You should have a player stripped off and ready, even if you just to be precautious, you know.
Yeah, so, 95 times out of 100 we don't concede in that scenario. You lock it down with 10 men, you get through it, you get the new man on, and you go from there. It's not a big deal. It just so happens, you know, I'm looking at the goal here, and I don't know if Minnesota sensed blood, But they have in our attacking third of the field, they have seven players. So they were, eight players. Sorry, they have eight players in our attacking field. We've got one player on the left lane, three players in the left central lane, two players in the central lane, and one player in the right lane. I mean, they are really overwhelming us big time. And so I wonder if they just sensed some blood and wanted to take advantage down to 10 man, especially right where Cesar Araujo would have been had he been available. But Pukki gets the ball right where Araujo would have been. And again, it's a low percentage chance. He's just taking a shot, but it's clinical, absolutely clinical. And, you know, the only other thing I'll say is Galese is standing right next to his near post and the ball still goes in. And it's a great shot, but again, questions on the goalkeeping there for sure.
Well, it's a great shot. I mean, because like you said, Pukki plays between the lines first, so he's already gotten into the space that would have been occupied by Cesar. Second, he gets to Schlegel, who steps out he actually didn't step out quick enough. I don't think Schlegel reacted quickly enough.
Not the first time we've heard that this season. Schlegel stepping out too late.
Yeah, so he kind of like was slow to see what was going on. And then by the time I think he figured it out, the guy has a shot on goal. And again, this is a top quality striker we're talking about. A proven striker, you know, for his country and at a top club level, you know, and you give him any sniff of goal. And like you said, Pedro concedes in his near post and he may have seen it a bit late, you know, to give him a little bit of defence. He might have seen the shot late, but even so, like, he's closer to that side of the goal than not. So, given the amount of saves that he's made over the years, you would have expected him to get that one. So it's just disappointing again.
Yeah, extremely disappointing. To close out the first half, we get a couple of chances. Felipe Martins misses one right on the goal line. He's stretching with his opposite foot, but you've got to score that, man.
It looks a lot worse than, you know, like you say, he's stretching. And such, but it just looked awful. I mean, he's clearly somebody that is not a goal scorer, you know.
Yeah.
He would have anticipated that a lot better if it was the position he was used to being in. You know, makes you wonder why he was up there to begin with, but that's another discussion, I think. He should have scored. And we know there's another chance like that in the second half as well. So,
yeah. Other than that, we Ojeda had a couple shots. He had a bicycle kick that, I remember specifically on that play wishing Muriel had gone earlier to Duncan, because Duncan was in front of his man. And he just didn't make the pass. He could have just clipped the ball into him and Duncan had a 1v1 on goal. Not saying we would have scored with the two or three times we were 1-on-1 on goal and didn't score. Mm-hmm. But yeah. But we do get a goal late on. Duncan Maguire, just with great technique, it just lasers it into the bottom left corner to make the game 2-2. And that was a great feeling, because after all the missed chances, to get one like that was relieving, to say the least. A huge sigh of relief, I think, from the team and the crowd.
It's just funny that we have this discussion a little bit with about Ramiro Henrique as well. And that he comes up with this like wonder goal kind of out of nowhere. And then you have these easier chances, which these players keep fluffing. And it just shows you sometimes, I think, with these players, is that when you have less time to think about it, maybe that's just when you get a little better result. And maybe that's something that Oscar needs to be talking to his attackers about. I wonder if we sometimes just play a little bit too cute and too precise. And, you know, and these players, you know, I mean, in some cases it's an experience, in others it's quality, but they just sometimes just don't bury the chance because they're not clinical enough. Whereas if you have less time to think about it, you just, you know, you end up burying it, you know? It's a strange fallacy. You see it all over the game now.
Yep, absolutely. Can't agree more. All right, last goal. Yes, there is one more, unfortunately. Way too easy way to get in behind. I remember the one thing when I was watching back, because I was at the stadium, but when I was watching it back, the main thing I thought is Robin Jonsson goes for the header, and is late. Can't blame him, late in the game. But I'm looking, and Cartagena is right there. And I think a better way to have attacked that situation is Cartagena attacks that first ball, our defenders stay back, and we go from there. But Minnesota, it's very simple. They win the flick on, the ball bounces into a spot where it's perfect for the Minnesota attacker to get onto it. And then Longwane, with a lot of speed, gets in behind and scores the dagger.
Yeah, it was just out of nowhere, because the game looked like it was, I think Orlando was kind of trending to win that game, or at
Oh,
least
yeah.
get the final chance, you know, at the end, and they just came out of nowhere with it. And with the defending, I mean, you just have to wonder, like, if the communication was, again, if the communication was there, you know, so who's going to attack the ball and such. You know, Wilder seems to be just a little bit, you know, sort of crazy these days.
Yeah.
And his mind just doesn't seem to be on it, like he's not thinking straight or something like that. With Janssen, I mean, I think that when you think about last season and how well Orlando were, you know, defending in a lot of games, I mean, there were a lot of games where they had to defend, you know, most of the time. And they were able to kind of hold it together, and everyone was playing kind of lights out at the back. You can't rely on that forever. Like, you know, I saw a lot of, I guess, predictions for the season, and how there was a talk of them rolling it back and just running the same system and everything again. And I think a lot of assumptions were made that, you know, everything can change, but it's only going to change positively. Nobody really seemed to account for the negative changes that could occur. And the fact remains is that defenses can only put up so long with sustained pressure. You know, eventually the rest of the team's going to have to do their job a little bit better. And I think the theme we've seen all season is that none of the departments of the team are going anywhere near their best level, and it's impacting the others. So the goal,
Absolutely. Yep.
even though the goal was kind of against the run of play, like, it's not a surprise, because you're asking someone like Janssen and such to continue to bail this team out.
I mean, he was
And
stepping up into, but Janssen is
yeah.
attacking that ball. There's a really good camera angle. Janssen's attacking that ball in the midfield zone, and Cartagena's standing maybe 5 yards away, maybe four. It could be even closer than that. And he's just walking and he's watching.
He's
He's
ball
just
watching.
watching. He's just looking at the challenge. And so it's a little lazy and some better communication.
Oh, just
Janssen's
drop.
just
If your
Janssen should just
defender's
be
going to
dropping
step.
and Cartagena should be doing it, doing the jump.
Yeah, or conversely, if your defender's going to push up and stop the ball, which we've seen Janssen do many times, you know, that's his forte, is he gets up and he stops it, and then he gets it and he passes it. You know, but the defensive midfielder needs to drop back. That's typically what you expect from the midfielder at that point. And I don't know, it's. There's like gaps all over the team, like, you know,
Yeah, the other
that's
breakdown is you're right with the gaps. The other breakdown is Halliday. He gets caught ball watching, and just that split second, Longwane runs off him, and then he goes to try and block the pass instead of covering the run. And he's probably the only player who could keep up with Longwane, Mikey Halliday. But
Yeah, but if
unfortunately,
you're
that's not the case.
Not concentrating, I mean, it doesn't matter how fast you are, right?
No, yeah, he
You know,
panicked
so
and he went straight to try and tackle the ball like a high school player. That's what it looked like. He just ran towards the ball, didn't cover
like
his man.
I mean, I do feel like, you know, and I've said this, like, the defense is weak, like, even with Brekalo coming in, I did always feel we needed a couple more defenders. I you know, like, the team performed well, but, you know, last season, but I think a lot of the limitations are already being exposed. And, you know, it's kind of sad to see, because, you know, you're going to have to rebuild in the back. It's not something that's easy to do in a salary cap league, right? So,
Agreed. All right, well,
yeah.
let's get away from that game and let's get to another depressing game. We go to Mexico in the Champions Cup, knowing all we need is a score draw to get through. And we're feeling pretty good. I think some quiet confidence that, you know, this team is good enough to go to Mexico and get a score draw. We can do that. That is in with the realm of possibilities. We start with quite a bit of rotation from the last lineup. Muriel starts instead of Duncan. Ladero starts instead of Enrique in the middle. Facu Torres comes in instead of Ojeda. And then Kyle Smith comes in at left back, and Bracalo comes in for Schlegel at center back. So that is how we lined up. We start the game in pretty much the worst possible fashion, with a really, really easy goal conceded. And again, I'm looking at the goalkeeper at this one. Do you feel Galese should have stopped that, or do you think I'm being unfair to him?
I mean, we go off, you know, you have to go off a previous form and history, right? He stopped a lot of harder goals than that. You know, it's not out of the realms of possibility that he should have saved it. You know, it's, again, I go back to my point in from the last game. You can only rely on certain players so much. I think the team was over-reliant on Pedro last year. And eventually, a guy's going to get tired. And I think that is Pedro's issue right now, by the way, is that he's tired. And that he's, you know, maybe he needs a rest, or needs to be dropped to refocus, you know. But yeah, he should have stopped it. I mean, it was, I don't want to use the word feeble because it's kind of derogatory, but it, well, that's what it was. It was kind of a feeble attempt to save it, you know.
Yeah, on the slow mo, there might be a slight deflection, but the ball bounces right over his hand. Mm-hmm. Most goalkeepers in the world are saving that, I think. I don't think it's really that hard of a save, in my opinion, for a player of his quality.
Well, it's like he got it. He got to it, effectively. So, you know, at that point, it's like, well, you didn't keep it out. You know, it's never fun really seeing a goalkeeper playing poorly at any point. But it should have been saved. And again, the whole dynamic of that game changed, well, strengthened, you know, in their favor very quickly, you know. So.
Oh, yeah. Yep. The one thing I said we couldn't do was we couldn't concede early. You know, I thought we needed to keep it as close as long as possible, whether it's 0-0 or even if it was 1-0 going into the latter stages of the game. Just the fact that they knew and we knew all we needed was a goal for the away goal to get through, that would have made it a bit nervier for them and given us some hope and momentum towards the end of the match. And you never know what could happen from there. Instead, we gift them a goal early, get them feeling confident, get their tails up. And a few minutes later, we do the unthinkable, we being Dogger Don, and idiotically just barge into the back of their player in the box. What was he thinking?
I have no idea.
What was he thinking?
This is something we've seen, though, from Oscar's teams over the years. I mean, I'm not really that surprised. Like, just his players lose their heads at key moments, and that is a fact. You know, they lose the composure. We didn't even discuss after the Minnesota game how Carter Gunn managed to get himself sent off after the game.
That's right. I meant to talk about that. Forgot.
You've got to at some point, like, and this is not an isolated thing. There's so many games I can point to, right? You know, like in the last couple of years, where the players have just lost their minds and they just do stupid things. You know. And it's really, really annoying to watch because, like you said, there's no need. The last thing you want to do in a stadium like that one, which, you know, was a very well attended, very loud, very aggressive fan base, and against a team that goes down as quick as they do, You know, we saw it. We've seen them in the games last year, this year. You have to only look at them and they fall over. So to barge into the penalty area is just ridiculous, you know?
Yeah. And I know what he was thinking. The ref had given or had allowed some contact earlier. And he was getting some retribution. And he just barged to the back. And he was thinking the ref was going to say, get up, play on. And Dagger Don was going to get a freebie. Yeah, but not in the penalty area.
Not in the penalty area. If you want your retribution, do it on the halfway line.
Yep.
You know, get him while he's up there on the touchline or something, if you really must. But the point is that you're doing the penalty area, you're asking for trouble. It's a stupid, elementary mistake.
Yeah, and you're right. This is something we've seen time and time again under Oscar Pereja. I mean, Schlegel last year in the playoffs, in big games too. Schlegel in the playoffs, Mauricio Pereira against New York City FC in the playoffs.
Yeah.
We saw... Even in the game before that, when Schlegel did the Hand of God, who was that against again? Or was that the NYCFC game?
That might have been, yeah. It might have been that game. I know which one you mean. I'm just trying to...
Yeah, but Pereira kicked somebody in the chest. Oh, maybe I'm thinking Pereira was in the New England game that we went out. He got a red card in that match, I believe.
That's when he tried to kill one of their players, right?
I think I'm getting it mixed up. Either he got NYCFC or he did it against New England. But in one of the games, he kicked somebody in the chest.
There was one game I went to, and I'm trying to think. This was a couple of years back now, but I just remember a really, really nasty tackle, and the red card came straight out.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was like, you know, in the stadium with their little ref belongs and OBT chant and everything. And then when you saw the replay, and you're like, well, hang on a sec. You know, like,
that's a nasty challenge.
you can't do that, like, you know.
So it's definitely a trend, which is nothing new for us. But the Minnesota thing as well, just quickly, that was bubbling up. Rosales got mad about something in the middle of the match towards the end, and he was getting a little dirty. He was getting a little chippy, and we were getting a little chippy back. And when they won the game late on, I think he was starting to give it to us, and we didn't like that. And Cartagena just took it too far and took a swing, and Rosales took a swing back, and now they're both red carded and probably fined, which is deserved.
Well, let's put it this way. If you're out at a bar and someone takes a swing at you and took a swing back, you probably both get arrested.
Yep.
You know, so why is that conduct acceptable in professional sport? You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, it shouldn't be. Like, the club, like, should discipline the player, not just the league. Because
I hope we do.
Not only has he got himself sent off, but he's missing now for two. It's two matches, right? Is it two?
I think so. And with Araujo injured.
I
think one of them, he's going to be on. One of the games, he's going to be on international break, so maybe we'll get away with it because he was going to be gone anyways, but still, absolutely ridiculous from him.
Yeah, he wouldn't miss the game on Sunday. Sunday, he would have been available. And then I think the one after that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because the Atlanta game, I think all the players are available. And then right after that, some of the guys are going for international duty. So, it's going to impact him in some way. I mean, it's just stupid. Like, you've got to sit down with them as a club or a coach or whatever, and you've got to tell these players, like, you know, look, you're professional athletes, you know. At the end of the day, you shouldn't be getting into a fistfight of anybody, especially after the game. Like, I can just about understand it during the game because, like, emotions are really high when you're playing. But, like, come on, after the game and the result's gone, surely you must have some kind of...
Just get down the tunnel.
Awareness that just get down the tunnel. The game's done. Can't change what's happened. Just, you know, kind of dust yourself off and get on with it. No, you have to get in a fight. You have to show how tough you are, and now you leave your team short. And it's really annoying.
Yes, it is. All right, so we concede the penalty 2-0. Mm-hmm. Somehow, Janssen dives in the box, and somehow the ref gifts the penalty and VAR doesn't overturn it.
Did VAR actually play a part in this game? Because I looked at it and I thought, well, I mean, there's more incidents which we're going to cover, you know what they are as well, but I felt VAR took the night off, honestly.
Yeah, it was like they said, oh, VAR is going to have a look at it, and then they went to VAR and there was no one sitting there.
It was just the phone room. The phone was constantly ringing.
Yeah. That's what it felt like in this match for sure. The penalty for me is not a penalty. So we got extremely lucky there. Do you agree?
Mm-hmm. I was very surprised. I mean, the only thing I can think was that the ref, I don't know, maybe felt bad about the penalty they got and decided to level it a bit. But I mean, that's just a reach, you know?
Yeah.
So it wasn't a penalty. I think Jensen he conned the ref enough, and maybe he knew the VAR people were not there, or they were sleeping or whatever.
Yeah, so Faku dispatches the penalty, and for me, this is where I want to talk about Faku. I was really, really disappointed with his performance. Not the first time I've been disappointed with him, especially in a big game. I think back to Atlanta at home last season. Think back to the playoffs last season, but this game in particular, I thought he was really poor. It might just be the injury, but some of the things that frustrated me the most were he wasn't taking on his man. You know, he had one or two 1v1 opportunities. As a DP winger, you have to take advantage of those opportunities, and he just one of them. You know, a couple minutes into the match before we concede the goal, he doesn't even like do anything attacking. He tries to pass, dribble back, pass back, and he loses the ball just super easily, which was frustrating. A couple minutes into the game, a couple of minutes later, we're down a goal. And then there was another instance he could have passed it, missed it. There was another instance he's in the 6-yard box and he doesn't shoot. I mean, he just, for me, he scores a goal in this game from the penalty spot, but he was almost a 0 out of 10 for me in this match.
Well, when you mentioned him, I thought you were going to praise the nerve that he had taking that penalty.
Because
it was a good penalty just for that, you know, on itself.
It was a good penalty, and it kept us in the game, but yeah.
But yeah, you know, a penalty's not enough. Like, that's, you know, that's some special teams, you know, nonsense that just saying, oh, you know, saying, oh, well, he scored a penalty, so he's, you know, he's this, and this to the team. You know, it doesn't do enough, and I don't know, like, there's a few ways you can look at it. I mean, he was pretty good last year, and then he had all this talk of the move to Arsenal and everything else, didn't materialise. Then there was a contract talks which seemed to be going on for months, and then he's finally signed, and I don't know, has he had the dreaded baby curse as well? Because don't like every Orlando player.
He must have.
He's had a kid, I believe. So, you know, so I don't know. Like, maybe he's fallen, you know, kind of like how Joe Bendick did. He was kind of playing like being talked about as a US men's goalkeeper up until he had a baby. And then his form just completely dropped off a cliff. I don't know. There's just a number of things. Like, he's a player that you need to. As a coach, you've got to sit down with them and you've got to be tough. I think you've got to start putting them on the bench. Maybe he's too comfortable. Maybe he's just gotten used to playing, and maybe subconsciously, even if he doesn't mean to, maybe he's just not trying as hard as he can. You know, it's a lot different, you know, in a league that's not a salary cap league, where you've got somebody in your same position who's just as good as you are pushing you. And I think that could be really the reason with some of these guys underperforming right now. They don't have anybody that can take him out of the team.
And the crazy thing is, there is someone good enough to take him out of the team in Ojeda. He just doesn't get the opportunities.
I think with Ojeda, I mean, there's only one simple thing I can tell you why I think that is. And, you know, and I noticed this when I watched the Tigres game when I was there the other week in Orlando. And Torres was impressive in man-marking their fullback, their attacking wing back, you know? And that's probably the reason why he's in the team, because of his work, right? And you've got to come to a point where, yeah, look, I really appreciate how hard you work and you're doing that, but at the end of the day, that should be the minimum expectation of any player in your team. It should not be a defining characteristic of a player especially someone who's supposed to be a, you know, your marquee attacker, you know. Like, I would sacrifice some of that man marking and whatnot for a little bit more individuality and confidence and more directness, you know.
Absolutely, because the man marking and the defensiveness, the defensive wingers on both sides, they're not helping our defense right now.
No, defense has gotten worse, if anything.
Yeah.
And we don't look very potent going forward, and it's, you've got to, I don't know, like maybe change the shape a little bit or something so you can accommodate a player like Torres and give him the freedom he needs to try and get his form back, you know? If you're going to play him, which is a DP and such, I understand, you know, MLS turns towards playing DPs, even if they're not playing very well. So if you're going to play him, fine, but you've got to maybe find a system that he can just kind of thrive in a little bit more and maybe take the pressure off him a little bit. Because right now, I think the pressure is clearly on him, and he's just not able to do the things that he knows what we've seen him do.
I think it's also time to try him in that central second striker role.
I've been saying for about 2 years that I think he's a number 10.
Yeah, he's not cutting it on the right. He's not.
Yeah, he doesn't cut on the right, but he, you know, he's a very dangerous player. He's still a very good player. I mean,
mm-hmm.
A lot of teams like him, and he's got good coaches, you know, internationally and everything else. I mean, a lot of people higher placed than us know he's a decent player. So take your most dangerous player, move him into the middle, and maybe mech teams have to commit to, to engaging him and give room for your other players to thrive. Because right now, you might as well just put him on a little island somewhere. There's no, you put him on the right, he's really ineffective. So it's, yep. It's not working, clearly not working.
Yep. All right. Let's jump ahead to the third goal. So, you know, it's a close game. You know, we're 2-1 at that point. And again, that's what I wanted, right? I wanted a close game, keep it as close as possible for as long as possible. I was actually pretty happy that we got it to 2-1, even though it was very lucky. Because again, if we got another goal, we're through. And so I'm feeling okay. Mm-hmm. Again, that quiet confidence comes back. We've gotten through that rough period. We were still giving up chances. And, you know, Galassi had to make a couple big saves right at the goal line, which he did. Mm-hmm. I think both were called for offsides, but still good on him making those saves.
Yeah.
And then he makes another big save on the goal line. But this time the ball bounces a little too close to the goal line. And the Tigres players celebrate. And the ref has no idea, but he sees the players celebrating. So he calls it a goal. Yep. Never a goal.
No, in a million years. Well, again, VAR, number one, should have been all over that, like a rash, because it's a clear and obvious error, in my opinion. And
agreed.
Secondly, the camera angles we were given on TV were pretty conclusive. I mean, the entire ball has to cross the line. And I would even say maybe half of it did, if you're lucky. And I don't know. It seemed like, to me, like, I think what you said, that the ref saw them celebrating and he just thought, screw it, I'm just going to let it stand. You know, and
that's a huge goal in the context of the tie. Huge.
Oh, it's,
it makes the game unwinnable, or the tie unwinnable for us.
Listen, it's co-ed league stuff. It's local co-ed league stuff where, you know, you feel bad for someone on one of the teams because they're not very good and they get a goal like that. So you let them have it. And it's an absolutely disastrous decision because it wasn't a goal. You cannot say 100% that ball was over. And the governing body that's supposed to check that for you was AWOL. So, like, how on earth do you reconcile that, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know, like...
It's ridiculous.
I'm not going to turn around and say Orlando was a superior team on the night and should have won the game and that. But things like that just make you wonder sometimes, like, you know, if certain things are just going on in the back that, you know, they want certain teams to go through.
It doesn't help with those kind of theories.
It doesn't, but you can't argue against it, you know?
No, not possible. I mean, just think what would have happened if let's say we're still 2-1. VAR comes in and says, nope, that's definitely not over the line. Orlando's ball, save. What happens if we go up the field later in the game and get that second penalty off the free kick that we got? We, you know, we put the free kick in. Janssen puts in the ball. He takes a shot, hits the hand, clear penalty. And we, you know, we're 2-2. Then we're going through. But no, we're 3-1, and all of a sudden it's the tie's over. Basically, that goal is just, it's criminal that it stands.
It's criminal that it stands, but it would also mean that a team that, you know, maybe the league looks at it commercially and thinks, oh, this team draws in all these fans for each game at the stadium. And, you know, obviously they're a big enough team in Mexico for the kickoff time to be changed to, you know, to whatever they feel like, basically. You know, we had the stupidly late kickoff in Orlando, which I thought was ridiculous. You know, and that impacted the attendance big time. And, you know, and then you have the stupidly late kickoff again. I mean, I understand to some degree that you've got to accommodate the time zone over there. But where was the accommodation for Orlando, you know? You're coming...
Right.
You know, you're on an away game. You're going to the... You know, you're going to Eastern time. So play at a time where Eastern time people, like us, you know, can go to the game. You know, because...
You know, yeah, killed our atmosphere on the night.
It's those things matter. Like, I know some people don't really believe in like home advantage. I'm a big believer in it. You know, I think that your home ground is, you know, should be where you see the best of your team. And I think that the fans should always have a part in that. And yet, Tigres got that accommodation made for them as well. And you just see things like that, and you're just like, it's pretty evident, kind of what, you know, what the CONCACAF people are trying to do. You know.
Yep. And an 8:30 or an 8 o'clock kickoff probably sees a couple more thousand people in the stadium.
Yeah, I mean, expecting it to be a sellout with effectively a week's notice is a lot, especially in the middle of a week. You know, and you've got the traffic and you've got, you know, families or kids that go to school and that type of thing. But to start the game at, well, supposedly started at 9, it actually started at 9:10. I think is just, I don't know, you should always play to the benefit of the... If you've got a two-legged tie, you should always give the home team the benefits that they should get by playing at home, right?
You would think.
So, you would think. Should have been a 6 o'clock. Wasn't the Cavalry game like at 6 o'clock or something?
Yeah, it was at 6. I had to rush over there.
Yeah, so, and even though the guys were playing in Vancouver, was it in Vancouver where they had to play the game?
I know it was over on the west side. I don't remember... Exactly.
I don't know if it was quite in Vancouver, but it wasn't. It was nowhere near where Cavalry are based. I know that much.
Yeah, they had some sort of field issue, yep.
So, yeah, so they moved them, you know, two time zones across, you know, and whatever. But even then, they managed to figure something out for the people that would be watching the game. And Tigres, yep, kind of had the red carpet treatment. I'm just very disappointed with it. I think it all plays in together, if you ask me.
Yeah, can't say you're wrong. All right, well, before we even had a chance to really make it 3-2, we end up down 4-1. Well, actually, before that, there was the red card. And I think we were 3-1 at the time. So maybe that gave a little bit more hope back to me. But soon after, we were down 4-1. And again... Galese. That's the summary for me for this goal. It's just, what is he doing? Where is he? He's completely lost his mind on where he's at in terms of his positioning. And like I said on the instant reaction, he's not even, the ball doesn't even go side netting. It goes into the center netting of the goal. And he's just so out of position that caught him off and he lets that in. It's ridiculous that ends up in the back of our net, honestly.
You know, when back in the days when I used to play FIFA Ultimate Team, I used to concede that type of goal all the time.
Yeah, just the early shot.
Just the early shot, like it was a trick that the game had, right? And you could get the ball like at that 35-yard sweet spot. and just roll down R1 and shoot, and it would do this curved shot that would just somehow always go past your goalkeeper, who was a little bit off his line. And it just looked just like that type of goal. I was like, I couldn't believe it when it went in, because I thought, you know, you expect them to have a shot. I mean, they've got a lot of good attacking players, so you don't necessarily think they're not going to shoot, but you don't expect it to actually go in, you know, and I don't know, it's just, I don't know what he's doing, man. I wish I could tell you.
Yeah, I wish I could tell everyone too. It's poor.
It's never good, like, watching a goalkeeper's form kind of just going off like it does, you know, because their mistakes get highlighted a hell of a lot more than most outfield players do.
And it's hurting us bad. It's hurting us bad right now.
Well, yeah, it's the most, like, goalkeeping mistakes are easily the most punished, you know, more so than a miss on goal or a possession lost in the middle of the field. I mean, a goalkeeper makes a mistake. I mean, it doesn't matter how well you play, and, you know, you can be a goal down. So, I don't know. It's something they've got to look at. I mean, it's another tough game at the weekend as well.
Oh, yeah.
Without a clutch of players that are not going to be available. And another thing, I think with Tigres going, I think Duncan should have started that game as well.
He came in and played really well.
Came in and played well, but he just scored twice in the game before. I mean, you know, surely you want your informed striker to be, you know, to be on the pitch. You know, I think he would have been a bit more suited maybe to the aggressive way that Tigres were playing. You know, he's someone who can hold his own with that, so. I'm surprised that he didn't play. So I'm not quite sure Muriel was ready yet to be fully, like, nailed on, you know, as a starter.
Yeah, I think we're missing Duncan's work rate up top, honestly. Mm-hmm. Muriel is work rate wise, kind of a zero right now. Mm-hmm. He tracks back at times and wins a tackle once or twice, but for the most part, he's not affecting the first ball out. And what Duncan does really well is he'll press and affect that first ball, and that mm-hmm. allows us to have a chance of winning it mm-hmm. and to get possession back and create turnovers in the middle of the pitch. And it all starts with that pressure at the top. If you just let them have the ball, for sure they're going to keep it more often than not. So I think we're missing that bit of pressure, and I'd like to see Duncan and Muriel start up top a game or two, because I think they actually mm-hmm. look pretty decent together when they're on the pitch at the same time.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you have Duncan kind of like leading the line and Muriel maybe just getting into the space behind him and linking the midfield, I mean, then you can get your four midfielders in from left to right that do your running and your hard work, and let Muriel have some of that creative freedom, you know, for the player. Yeah,
exactly.
And he can link, and, you know, and it gives Duncan some support. I mean, like I said, I'm an advocate for a change of shape, at least, and just to try something new and, you know, maybe stop the goals going in so much, I think.
Yep.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, okay, we get a penalty, we score it, but we lose the game 4-2, where we crash out. We've got Atlanta coming up. I don't have a ton of major thoughts on the game. I want to see us go and at least get a good performance. Do you have any mm-hmm. thoughts on the Atlanta match?
Well, you have to worry about the centre of midfield. I think I have no idea who's going to start. I mean, you know, Felipe is obviously going to start. And then who's going to go next to him? Is it going to be Ladero? Are they going to try something, you know, different? You know, I don't think they're going to give... I'm trying to think what that kid's name is now. Pasewski, I mean, they could put him in, but
I hope not. His professional debut in that environment, no.
I mean, sometimes you'll get kids that you will just put in that, but there's it's not often that you will, and it's not fair on the player to do that to him, because I mean, knowing how it goes, he'll go and he can play a poor game. You won't see him for the rest of the season because of it, which
kills his career.
Fair, yeah, you know. It's like I remember with Orlando had did Cam Lindley. Do you remember him a few years
mm-hmm.
ago?
Mm-hmm.
Who I thought, and I watched some of the tape on him when they got him, like when they traded for him, and so it was like one of those really random trades. And then saw some video and I thought he looks a decent player. And I think he started the first three games in 2018. And then you never saw him again. Like, he went from being a starter to, like, just virtually non-existent.
Yep. I do remember that.
And I just think that's just such a strange outcome for a player. Like, and you know, you fear the same for someone like Kosevsky. So, you know, maybe they'll put Ladera back there, which I don't know. Then even Felipe against Thiago Almada, I don't fancy that, honestly. You could maybe put Brekalo in the midfield, but then that means Schlegel comes into the back.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, Brekalo has played in midfield before.
Hey, last few minutes of the Minnesota game, Kyle Smith came on for Felipe.
Yeah, well, even then, I wouldn't be against that, because, I mean, at least with Smith, I mean, there's one thing I'll say with Smith is that he does tend to do the sensible thing, at least.
Oh, which, yeah.
Given he does people's taxes, I'm assuming just people's taxes. But he will do. I'm sure doing the sensible thing is a good thing for him, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so,
yeah, sure.
I know he probably doesn't do people's taxes, but, you know, he could, and he probably would be sensible if he did. And I expect that, given that's how he plays. So, I mean, I think it's going to have to be some kind of left field move like that to make up that gap in midfield. But, you know, like, the squad for me is just too light. Like, I see names and I see people sat on the bench, but I don't see obvious candidates to come in the team.
You know? Yeah, especially position of the pitch. Yep. For me, the most important – oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, going back to the Tigres game, like, and I saw this with some of the other results that the MLS teams had, like, in Philadelphia got absolutely spanked as well, which was not, you know, expected. And, you know, the league maybe has to kind of look at the salary cap thing, and maybe teams have got to invest in some of the defensive players, because the whole culture was just about buying attackers and, you know, flair-ridden midfielders. You know, it's nice and it gets people to watch games, but, you know, it doesn't matter if you can't keep the goals out. There's got to be maybe some kind of culture change and, you know, and allow teams to bring in more players, because then they'll start paying more attention to that defensive part of the field, you know?
So, 100% agree. Yep.
You'll see this every year in CONCACAF until they do that, so. You
know, yeah.
It's, and we'll see.
10 plus years, we've seen this pretty regularly, for sure. Yeah. All right. Only thing I'll add on the Atlanta match, I think the Atlanta match, if we were to lose it, wouldn't be the end of the world. Obviously, we want to win it, but I think what's more important is the performance. I think it's really important that we at least put up a good fight. Even, you know, lose by the odd goal, I think that's what we need if we were to lose. We can't go to Atlanta and get smacked like we did against Miami. We need to come out and put up a good performance. I think, the game that we have to win is the Austin match at home. That's the one that I would be targeting and say this is a must-win game. If we don't lose this, we have some real problems with this squad.
Yeah, I mean, the home games are important. I think that you've got to make your home your fortress. So it's a tough run of games, but, you know, I see people complain about the run of games and everything else, but, you know, part of being a good team is not just having the talent on the books. It's about having the adaptability to have these tough runs and to come out of them with, you know, with credibility and with points on the board, you know?
So, oh, yeah.
It's not excusable that it's a tough run. I mean, I know it is, but every team has something like this at some point in the season. So it's up to the players now to kind of be able to deal with that. And sometimes you've got to push through those multiple games. You know, I hear about fixture congestion and everything. I don't know if you heard, but Southampton over in the Championship, they've got 10 games in 36 days after the international break. You know,
that is ugly. Ugly run.
10 games in 36 days. Leeds have 9 in 36 days. You know, but you just get on with it. You know, you just have to get on with it. You know, as a group of fans and as a group of players, you've just got to accept that if you want to be at the top level competing in the CONCACAF Champions League and such, then you need to be willing you've got to find a way to get results. You know, it's no good blaming that. And I know that that's an excuse that gets bandied around, but you know, players need to get on with it. And like you said, a performance is needed, even if it's a defeat, but it's a strong performance where the players are doing the simple things well and they're focused and they're switched on. I think that would go a long way to kind of repairing the trust. And then, like you said, the Austin game after that is, and you know, it's not like a six-pointer, but it is a must-win. You've got to win something, right?
Yeah, if we were to go in that winless in MLS, that's a must-win for me. So, all right, well, let's end it there. We went a little bit longer than I wanted to on a Friday night, but thanks for chatting with me. I think we had some good discussion again. And where can our listeners? Nope, I'm not going to do it this time. You're not on Twitter right now. You are enjoying the hiatus.
I'm enjoying the hiatus because it's gone down the pan a bit. So.
Oh yeah. All right. Well, our listeners can follow the podcast and myself at Lions Blog One. And as always, Daniel, my friend, vamos Orlando.
Indeed.
To put in all the work, everybody, for each other on the field, and then we stay there as a unit, and we move towards our goals together as one.
Martins, it's Sven Angulo to cross into the box, that's one missed it!